Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might also know me as the Broth Lady, or the inventor of the hashtag More Vegetables Than a Vegetarian. I'm the co-author of several paleo cookbooks, including Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, and the upcoming Real Life Paleo. I like to talk about health at any size, and self-love, and personal acceptance. Specifically, I have a love for lifting heavy things. If you're interested in finding more out about that, you can also find me on Strong Woman Radio.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne of ThePaleoMom.com. I'm the New York Times best-selling author of The Paleo Approach and The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm passionate about nutrient density and the intersection of diet and lifestyle with health, which really means I just love talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up and you get to listen to our gossip.
Hey.
Hello.
How are you?
I am actually really nervous. I'm going to be on live television tomorrow, and I was just upstairs prepping for that, so...
Dude.
Yeah, I'm a little bit, like, cold sweat, you know? What are you going to do?
Live television's big time.
We'll see. I'll probably mess it up. They want me to do a cooking segment. I explained to them that I don't cook.
Is Matt going to be there?
Not on screen. Like, just me pretending that I know how to cook.
This could be fun.
Yeah. So I'm also going to be talking about the Take Back Your Health conference that we're speaking at. I'm going to be... Yeah, I'll be on the segment with Polyface Farms, who will also be there, and they're supplying some of the ingredients to the recipe that I'm making on screen tomorrow.
What are you making?
I'm making the mini corn dog muffins.
Yum.
Yeah. You should actually make those for the girls. They would love them.
Yeah, and with all my extra energy, I'm going to do that. Totally.
Maybe you should make Stacy's soup, and then you'll have more energy, and then you can make mini corn dog muffins.
The moment, so I had this huge cooking day, cooking weekend, really, in part just because I had a lot of food in the house, but in part because I'm finalizing a project that I will be more ready to talk about next week on the podcast, but doing, you know, a few more recipes for a few more photos for a thing. And so I had a surplus of leftovers, which was really good because I am not well today. I know you can't tell from my voice. I don't have one that affects the frog. It makes me froggy. So my four-year-old was sick on Friday and had, you know, fever and, you know, was complaining about an upset stomach. She threw up once and complaining about a sore throat and her throat.
And then
was,
did
like,
everybody
really
freak
red.
Out about Ebola?
No. Although I had been in Dallas, but I flew Delta, not Frontier. So we're good. But I went like, okay, this looks like pretty classic strep. I'll take her to the doctor's office. And we did the rapid strep test before the doctor actually examined her. And she said, like, the rapid strep was negative, but she said, like, looking at this throat, it looks like a strep throat. And I would be, if I didn't have the rapid strep right now, I would be prescribing antibiotics. And I said, well, you know, why don't we do like the wait and see thing? So she wrote me a prescription. I filled it in case I decided at 2 a.m. it was time for antibiotics. And, you know, we just had it on hand in case it got bad. And it didn't get bad. It just got different. So her fever broke overnight that night. And in the morning, she started with these spots on her face and still complaining about an upset tummy and still complaining about a sore throat. And then by Saturday evening, she started getting the blistery spots on her feet. And I went, wait a minute, mouth, foot, I know what this is.
Yeah.
So she has hand, foot, and mouth disease, which is like, it's a virus. It's, you know, has an incredibly low rate of anything bad happening, like in the tiniest fractions of a percentile. It's just one of those rite of passage childhood diseases like roseola or fifth disease. It just happens. But apparently I never had it as a kid, which my mom told me, it confirmed for me today, because I have it. And I'm not thrilled about it. It's incredibly painful. And I have such a mild, mild case. Like, I have a few blisters right at the very, very back of my throat. And my hands and my feet are, they're just the mildest, mildest little bit pink. Like, it's, you would never know. Like, you would never know to look at me. But my feet and my hands are, like, burning and aching at the same time. It's not an itchy feeling. It's like a, it's like the feeling of when you like have one of those days where you walk like 7 or 8 times the longest you ever walk. So, you know, it's one of those days where you walked 10 miles and you never walk more than a mile in a day and your feet just hurt at the end of the day. It's kind of that same feeling. And I've been really, I've been having really bad stomach cramps and like periodic nausea, but no vomiting, which I'm very, very thankful for. But it's, I'm miserable. You're supposed to get this over with when you're a kid for a reason. It's because grownups can't take it. It's not cool. My feet hurt. My hands hurt. My throat hurts. And that's all. And it's really not a big deal.
And you're just feeling a little whiny.
I'm feeling very whiny about it. And it's funny. I posted on Facebook a status post earlier today that was like, I don't know what this is telling me about my immune system. So I've got this extremely mild case of it. So am I, but, and you know, my mom confirmed for me today that I've never had it as a kid. So should I be like, rah, rah, my immune system's awesome. It's fighting this off so well. I've only got this mild case. But at the same time, it's really unusual for adults to get it. Like, it's basically considered a disease of 5-year-olds and younger. And so like, should I be like, my immune system's clearly not doing anything because I am a grown up and I'm not supposed to get this. Like, it's, I feel like it's supposed to tell me one of those two extremes about how my immune system is doing. So I posted something to that effect on Facebook, and the number of people who said, yeah, I got it from my kid. Yeah, I got it from my coworker's kid. And the number of people who have been like, explaining to me that they've had it like recently and that it's awful. It made me feel like, okay, maybe the unusual part is more in a reporting issue and not, you know, because we see that a lot in especially statistics for more minor diseases, is they're dramatically underreported because, like, I'm not going to go to my doctor now and be like, I have hand, foot, and mouth disease, because they can't do anything. I mean, the most they're going to tell me to do is pop an Advil for the pain, which I'm not about to do. So it's basically just like, suffer through it. It'll last 7 to 10 days. So like, why would I then, you know, drag my whiny butt to the doctor just to whine and have them be like, yeah, too bad. So I think when they, you know, my complete non-scientific, have no data to support this whatsoever suspicion is when they say that occurrence in adults is rare, it's more of a underreporting thing, and that it, because it is a childhood disease, sort of like how, you know, when we were kids, before there was a chickenpox vaccine, we all got chickenpox typically under the age of, you know, 7 or 8, but you could, you know, if you didn't get it as a kid, and people do get it as adults. So it's just a much lower frequency because of how kids do this school thing and then they share germs and other things. So I was whining about my hands hurt.
You did get something fun and exciting today.
I did. And it made me forget about my sore feet for like 6.5 minutes. It was awesome. So I got a box, and let me tell you, this box was shoved into my mailbox and not brought up to my front door. And it took me like 45 seconds of prying to pull it out of my mailbox, because I got a beautiful box with 5 copies of Real Life Paleo in it.
and I may or may not have giggled. It is so beautiful. Like, I got to see this book as PDF form, and I think our regular listeners know the story that you sent me a PDF to preview, and at that point I demanded the privilege of writing the foreword for the book because I wanted my name on your book. And I got it. And yay me, I feel really good about it. So I mean, I was blown away. And I mean, I knew what this project, you know, what your hopes and dreams for this project were from the very beginning, but to actually see it materialize, I was like, dang it, I want to write the foreword for this thing. And so then to see it in actual, like, physical print form, and it's just even more beautiful in real life. And haha, see what I did there?
Thank you.
In real life paleo, just throwing it out there so that just everyone sees how clever I am, even with hand, foot, and mouth. So
your nerd factor has not gone away.
No, I have no brain fog with this disease whatsoever. So it's just gorgeous. So I just sat and like flipped through it, and then, you know, found the pictures of me, and then, you know, looked at all of these things that were like my favorite things from going through the PDF and then seeing them and the final version. And like, you've got an amazing index. I don't know why that makes me geek out, but indexes.
Thank you. And
I like indexes. What can I say? And then my name's on the front cover and the back cover. So I geeked out more.
It totally is. You got your name on both. I don't even know if my name's on both sides.
Yeah, you're right. I'm not sure your name is. So I'm like,
well, at least my name's on the spine. At least I've got that going for
you. Got it on the spine, and your name is in a bigger font.
There's that.
As it should be. So it's absolutely gorgeous. I've got some extra copies. So look out for giveaways. In fact, I'll probably do a giveaway before this show even goes live. But if anybody is wanting to know where to go to get one of my copies of Real Life Paleo, I like to give away books on Instagram. It's like my favorite place to give away books. So you're going to have to follow me on Instagram. And if you don't have an Instagram account, you're just going to have to get one. Because it's free and you don't even need a smartphone for an Instagram account. You need some kind of smartphone or tablet in order to post pictures onto Instagram, but you can be like an Instagram reader and commenter just with a computer. And for the sake of entering a giveaway, that's all you need. So I'm just saying, Instagram's awesome. Thanks to a certain person for introducing me to it.
You're welcome.
So you're going to be on TV and with Joel Salatin.
No, I think with Susan, who's one of his managers, liaisons, kind of thing.
That's still cool.
Joel's kind of a busy guy. So I'll be discussing the health conference that you and I are both speaking at on November 2nd, the Take Back Your Health conference. And I think they want me to address a little bit my topic on that. So I might like give two sentences on the three-phased approach, which is kind of a unique take on paleo and what real life paleo is all about, other than the 175 delicious recipes. And then I'll be demoing the mini corn dog muffins. And we also made the snack balls and the kale chips. So we have snack balls and kale chips on our blog already, but we actually made additional recipes. So like our snack balls are one of our most famous, popular, whatever recipes. We came up with the nut-free version of that to make an AIP-friendly version when I was on strict AIP, and it kind of was like groundbreaking to use banana chips. I don't know why.
I do seem to remember telling you that it was brilliant.
So we used banana chips instead of nuts. And so we made the banana bread balls, but then we also made one of the new ones from the book, which is coconut cream snack balls, which are supposed to be like the Lara Bar versions of those. And then we made pizza kale chips, which we don't actually have on our blog, but are really, I hear, amazingly delicious. I can't have tomato, so I don't know. The kids eat a whole tray of kale, so I'm pretty sure it's all right.
Isn't that the worst, though? Yeah. Because I'll do that periodically. I'll work on a recipe that is a recreation of, you know, some, you know, typical Western food or some traditional food, and it needs tomatoes in order to be, you know, a whatever it, that thing is. And I'll work on it and I'll make my family eat it. And I'll just like go by smell and their reactions to figure out if I've got it right. And I don't do it very often just because it makes me sad.
Yeah, we actually don't ever do it on the blog because the blog is food that we create for ourselves and eat in the house. But when you're writing a book, I mean, other than your book, which was an AIP cookbook, mm-hmm. but when you're writing a general cookbook, as much as there's a lot of nut-free, nightshade-free, and egg-free recipes in the book, there are also people that don't have those restrictions that enjoy the taste of pizza. So, and all the boys don't have that problem. Finn's a little sensitive, but he's not nearly as sensitive as me. So, for that purpose, we develop things for the cookbook, but the bonus of having a cookbook is that we actually have formal testers. So we send recipes to people who are like third party, not friends. They're not going to tell us nice things. And we're like, make this and tell us what you think. So then at the very least, I know that even though I haven't tried it, all four of the boys liked it. And then these two strangers liked it. And so it must be fine. But yeah. So
I do it occasionally for the blog, but in part because I, you know, the way my family, the blog is the way my family eats, not just how I eat. And I do enjoy cooking for my family. And so once or twice a year, I will like go to the work of making something that's special for them, even though I can't eat it. And so when I do that, then it becomes a blog recipe, but it's because my blog is not just how I eat. It's how my whole family eats. And sometimes my family eats tomatoes.
Well, everything revolves around me in this house. So
so are there going to be any leftovers when I get there? That's what I want to know.
Well, that's like 2 weeks away. So we can certainly make you some fresh food, not tomato based, if you're interested in that.
I do enjoy eating food. Weirdly.
I know you do. And you're always very complimentary of Matt's cooking. So I'm sure he will have soup and all kinds of stuff for you.
Awesome. How can you not be complimentary of Matt's cooking?
I'm a fan. It wooed me.
Yeah.
And it evidently, a lot of people like his food because we're launching our third cookbook. So clearly some people like his food.
Cookbook and then 2 ebooks down and
yeah, this is actually our 5th book. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So, but it's always better when somebody else makes it for you. So I personally enjoy when Matt cooks. When I make things that he's like made a recipe for, I'm like, it's not as good when you have to like work for it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
So I will try not to embarrass myself on tomorrow's live segment, but by the time this podcast launches, we'll have a post up on the blog and you'll actually be able to see the segment because they put them up on their blog. And so we will do a blog post and link to the video so that you can watch all of my amazingly embarrassing, who knows what's going to happen-ness for yourself.
I'm going to look for that.
Well, you're going to finally read one of our blog posts?
This is for the first time in months, yes.
I know. You still probably haven't checked out Tutorial Thursday.
No, I haven't.
Sarah.
You know what? It's going to start being a thing.
I know.
Tutorial Thursday.
You're going to avoid it. Yeah. Like, I avoided Titanic for years. Like, everybody, when Titanic came out, it was oh my God, have you seen Titanic? It's the best movie. And I'm like, no, I'm avoiding it on principle. That's what you're going to do with Tutorial Thursdays.
So how long was it? So I saw Titanic 3 times in the theaters, and it was, like, the only movie I had ever gone to see even more than once in the theaters. And I saw it 3 times because I was part of the, like, wave of crazy girls who made it the thing it was. So how long was it between when Titanic was a thing and when you actually gave in and saw Titanic?
8 years.
Okay, okay, so I don't have to read your blog for like 8 years.
And for the record, I did the same thing with Star Wars. Like, I know they're both good movies, and I've seen them both, but I just have this. I'm like an incredibly principled person.
Star Wars original trilogy.
Yeah, both. Mm-hmm. I hadn't seen either. I remembered.
How can you be the age you are and not have seen Star Wars when you were a kid?
Because we didn't have a TV.
Didn't you have? I didn't have a TV. We used to rent a TV at the same time as we rented a VCR and the big honking VHS tapes.
Yeah, we weren't renting TVs.
Once every, 6 months.
No, we didn't rent a TV. I think I saw part of Star Wars at a friend's house because I remembered Ewoks. Maybe that's a different... I don't even remember. But,
There's Ewoks.
Yeah. But I didn't, see the whole movie and... Anyway, it didn't matter. I ended up watching the whole series for the first time with Cole as he watched it for the first time. So that was actually really fun, and I'm glad that I hadn't seen it.
Husband is desperately trying to talk my 7-year-old into starting starting watching Star Wars.
She's totally the right age,
but she gets scared by movies really easily. So I keep telling him that he needs to start with episode 1 because Jar Jar Binks is made for 7-year-olds. And he is one of the original trilogy, devotees. And he's one of those people who didn't like Jar Jar, even though Jar Jar was awesome and very funny. And see, now I just alienated half our male listeners, but the other half of our male listeners think I'm awesome. So you either love Jar Jar or you completely the opposite of love Jar Jar.
Well, I don't think it's just Jar Jar. There's Anyway, this is such a tangent.
No, it really is just Jar Jar. So anyways, I'm trying to talk him into starting with episode 1, but he wants to start with episode 4 because he wants her to see them in that order. But I
wanted to watch from episode 1, but Matt was insistent that we needed to start at 4. I was like, it's supposed to be in chronological order. Why wouldn't we start from the beginning? And he's like, no, don't do that.
See, that's, like, that's, okay. And that's the way my husband is. He's like, we got to start at 4.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, you got to, she's 7. You got to start at 1 because you got to start with Jar Jar. You got to warm her up with Jar Jar. But she still basically doesn't want to watch either of them. So at this point, it's
a non-starter. Yeah. Cool.
So who knew that we could talk about Star Wars on the PaleoView podcast?
I knew. That's a geek thing. We're geeks. I have 3 boys. I could talk about Star Wars anywhere. I think I've seen the movies a bazillion times at this point. It's like one of the movies that we keep in the van for when we go on trips. It's like, we have 5 DVDs that we keep in the van that the boys just watch over and over again. So I've at least heard the, Luke, I'm your father, a bazillion times at this point. So
we actually had a conversation over the dinner table a few weeks ago, and Ewoks came up for some reason. And we started, my husband and I were doing Ewok impressions, and our kids were looking at us like, you guys are crazy. So I ended up finding some YouTube video that was just audio of Ewoks and playing it for the kids. It became the most hilarious dinner ever. I highly recommend Ewok impressions to liven up a family dinner conversation.
And now I've livened you up and you're much less whiny. So maybe we could actually do a show.
We better hurry up before the wine comes back. Because it does. It will just come out of nowhere. And I'll be like, my feet are sore. Because they are really sore.
I just want to remind everyone before we move on that we've updated our event listings for our book signings to now be linked to most locations. We're still missing a few. But hopefully by the time this goes live, that won't be the case. But nevertheless, if you've been holding out on RSVPing because you weren't sure, which part of the area we would be in or something, go check those out. We'll have a link in the show notes, but also on the sidebar of both Sarah and I's site, we have the event listing there, so you can check that out and find out where we'll be. I would also highly encourage you, if you're on the opposite side of town from where we are, and you're like, oh, that'll be 40 minutes in traffic, just remember we're probably never coming back. So you need to decide if 40 minutes is worth meeting us or never meeting us. So that's up to you. I'm just saying. I drove 3 hours to a Balanced Bites seminar once. I have flown to Paleo FX. I've done a lot of things because I wanted to be a part of the community. So we would love to have you join us and be a part of the community. But if it's 40 minutes away, please do not complain to us that you want us to be also coming to another city 40 minutes from there, because it's totally not fair to the people who, like, in the middle of the country that we're entirely not even visiting.
We're sorry, middle of the country.
We're really sorry. But you know what? Can I take a second moment to tangent here about this? I want to tell people that we base our location. Okay, I won't speak for Sarah. I chose the locations of our book signings based on A, which cities had the most people trafficking our blog, because we can look at that through analytics, and two, which cities purchased the most of our books, because we can get a report of sales from our books. So if you're in a part of the country that we're completely not visiting, other than San Francisco and Denver, I'm really sorry about that. We just couldn't make it work. But if you're in a part of the country that we're not visiting, it's because your people aren't on the paleo wagon yet. So work them. And then maybe the next time someone comes on a tour, if you've been having your city go to people's websites and buy the books, then they'll be more likely to come for a book tour. But people have been complaining so much about all the places that we're not going. And I'm like, hello, we're going to 13 cities in 14 days. I am literally not coming home and seeing my children for 2 whole weeks and then going straight back to work without even so much as a day off. So please have understanding that we are human and can only do so much, and it's already a lot. And when you say things like, why aren't you coming to this other city 1 hour from the place that you're already going, it makes me kind of want to poke out my eyeballs a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, I have started just skipping over those comments and not...
Well, I'm skipping them too, so now I'm addressing it. Okay. It's too long to type out, so there, you just got the answer.
Yeah. So I have nothing to add because you just kind of got all of it. Are you going to Texas on this tour?
I am not. Because we were going to Paleo FX in 2015, I decided that I would, be supporting other states that I wouldn't also be visiting in the future.
I was in Denver just a little over a week ago. I guess I already talked about Denver last week on the podcast. I remember that now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really, 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 really wish we could have made Denver.
I really wish I could have been in Denver for more than 7 hours from gate to gate.
So maybe what Sarah and I will do is in the New Year's, when she convinces me to go to Canada, maybe we will do a...
I found my husband was cleaning out the key jar. So actually he found 2 TTC transit tokens. I mean, all of our listeners in Toronto are just laughing hysterically. That means that you and I can ride the subway and our streetcar.
Well, that's worth going. Somewhere. A $2 token that you found in your purse from 1974.
I'm pretty sure those are each worth $2.50 now. Or maybe even more. And I'm sure one of our listeners will comment on the show notes to let us know how much TTC fare is these days. But that means that you and I can go somewhere cool. One way.
Awesome. Somewhere cool.
Therefore, I have these tokens. I have to go back to Toronto to spend them. I hope the TTC still takes tokens, actually. I'm sure they do. They must. They've taken tokens for like a million years. They're not just going to stop just because I left. Right? Right.
Do you have something you want to talk about this week?
I do. I want to talk about beverages.
When you told me what this show topic was going to be, I was like, really? We're going to have a show on beverages? Which is why I've kind of blown 27 minutes of the podcast just chit-chatting. Because I'm like... drink water. Yeah.
Okay, and now we're done.
Yep.
No, I think that it's one of those things, I was going through a lot of our, we have a lot of questions that are sort of like basic paleo questions. And I was, going through them and kind of reminding myself about, a lot of these questions we've talked about on the show before. And a lot of them are sort of gray areas, or a lot of them are people who are confused between the difference between paleo and the autoimmune protocol. Or a lot of it is people wanting to know what the best protein powder is because they just can't give up their morning smoothies. So there's, there's sort of recurring questions, but I realized that I kept hitting questions to do with beverages, and that this is not a topic that we've ever covered on the show. And I thought, hey, I have hand, foot, and mouth disease.
I'd like to talk about things you drink. So, so I thought we should do a paleo beverage themed show. And I think, you know, maybe what we can do before we jump into a Science with Sarah segment is maybe we can talk a little bit about what would be the, you know, the classic, the best choice, the best paleo beverage choice. If you're going to drink anything, Stacey, what should you be drinking?
Water.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was a little worried I was going to get that wrong. I'm like, well, I mean, you could drink a non-caffeinated tea, has antioxidants. You could drink kombucha, it's fermented. You could drink, you know, add BCAA powder to your drink because it's got amino acids, but it tastes like foot if it's unsweetened. But then I was like, no, I just drink water most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess we could, you know, talk about what are, you know, that what are sort of considered paleo. So you mentioned a lot of them right there. So, you know, water or sparkling water or herbal teas.
You know, I think we should be specific about sparkling water because I think a lot of people get confused about tonic water and club soda.
Yeah. So club soda has no sugar in it and it just has carbon dioxide in it. Whereas mineral water, which is what I really mean by sparkling water, also has trace minerals and carbon dioxide in it. So when I mean sparkling water, like I'll drink club soda on an airplane if that's the only bubbly, non-sweetened thing they have. But what I really mean is mineral water because you're getting some useful trace minerals, a lot of magnesium actually in mineral water. Did I miss anything between the difference between mineral water and...
Well, I think the biggest difference for me is I always get club soda and tonic water mixed up because
tonic water has sugar.
I would assume that tonic water would not have sugar and club soda would have sugar. So it's always the opposite of what I think it should be. But for me, when I go out, because I don't drink alcohol anymore, because I'm a ridiculous human being, mostly, that's not a paleo thing. Go for the gin and kombucha, my friends. But when I go places, I don't feel like dealing with the are you pregnant question 8 times while I don't drink a beverage. So I always get club soda with gin. I mean, with lime. I wish I was getting it with gin. No, I'm getting it with freshly squeezed lime juice. And then it looks like I'm drinking a gin and tonic and nobody asks anything.
You know, so I actually started drinking more mineral water when I gave up drinking wine when I first started the autoimmune protocol, like nearly 3 years ago. And for me, it actually, like, I think because it's, I've always liked dry wines, and I think because it's spark or mineral water slightly bitter, it really kind of hits the same like pleasure centers in my brain. I don't get drunk, but I really enjoy it. So that's sort of my typical, I'll have a glass or two every evening usually. So what would be generally acceptable on a paleo diet? So not necessarily from the perspective of did Paleolithic man make coffee, because clearly Paleolithic man did not, but what would be generally, you know, considered okay on a paleo diet, if you're healthy and don't have chronic illness, coffee can be inflammatory, especially if drunken daily. Black tea, green tea, you know, white tea, plant teas, and herbal teas, generally considered paleo. Kombucha, kefir, so water kefir or kefir made with milk kefir made with coconut milk would be considered paleo. Kvass, any other kind of, you know, fermented vegetable juices or fermented teas. Kombucha. Did I mention kombucha already?
I said it 8 times.
Did say it, and I thank you. And I feel like I'm missing like an entire class of beverages that would be considered. But like wine or distilled alcohols, generally, you know, most people on a paleo diet consume those, even though alcohol is a gut irritant. If you are a healthy person not dealing with chronic illness, alcohol in moderation may actually provide some health benefits. And I'll talk about alcohol a little bit more in the Science with Sarah segment. So
okay, I was going to say, I think you should specify, but if you're going to do that in science.
Yeah, I am going to do that in science.
I get asked that question so many times. Like, do I have to give up booze? Which booze do I not have to give up? So some of the things that we used in the beginning, more transition type foods, drinks, obviously drinks, we got a soda stream and we started making our own bubbly water, and then we would, sweeten it and make it flavored on our own by adding like clementine juice or clementine zest, lime juice. If you do stevia, we used to do some of the vanilla cream stevia with orange juice, like clementine juice, and it made like a creamsicle type drink that you're making yourself. If you're really struggling to get rid of soda, making those kinds of things yourself. And then what we did is we just kind of like cut back and back on the sweetener or the flavorings in it until it was basically just water. So we do have a post up on our site about some of the different quote unquote recipes we use to make those beverages, but you can use all different kinds of extracts and fruit juices and whatever to sweeten your own kind of soda stream machine beverage. And then for the kids, they had been drinking soy milk because we had lactose intolerance, or what we thought was lactose intolerance, and therefore I thought that the best thing for them was soy milk. And so we transitioned them to almond and coconut milk. And we did buy the cartons, and we still buy the cartons sometimes, but we try to limit that so that they never drink just cups of like almond milk anymore. It's more for like cooking or, you know, as a base for something if we're in a rush and can't make our own, but we don't really do that much anymore. Smoothies are another beverage that we use often. You can add protein powder or not. Usually we don't. I drink one in the mornings, but we've talked about why. But the kids have smoothies all the time, and that's more of a food than a beverage. But it is a calorically dense beverage, which is really great for the kids when they're starving and home after school, and we're like, okay, we're going to make this coconut milk smoothie for you. And in that case, you can just use canned full fat coconut milk, and it's just 100% coconut if you buy the right brand. So unsweet regular tea.
You managed to get nut milks, which we had forgotten, in there.
Yeah.
And smoothies in there. We should mention juicing, like vegetable juices especially, because that's something that, you know, a lot of people coming to paleo from sort of a plant-based diet type educational aspect really enjoy juicing, so we should, don't let me forget to address that at least briefly.
Okay, so the one other thing that I could think of before we do that, I know you address teas, but I think people often forget that you can have like unsweet iced tea, which is something that when I go to a restaurant, if I'm like really craving, like if I'm like, oh, I really want a soda, like I just want to gulp down something with flavor, getting an unsweet iced tea and then I squeeze lemon in it is, at this point for me, like a soda. It's got caffeine and I enjoy that. So the one thing I'll say about smoothies, juicing before you jump into it, is that there's two different kinds of juicing, and I'm totally not into detoxing on like a 30-day juice. Somebody at my work the other day, I was handing out copies of Real Life Paleo to like coworkers who wanted copies, and this like person was standing there whom I didn't know as I was handing it to someone that I did know, and she was like, oh yeah, I've heard about paleo. I think I'm going to try that next. Last month I did this 30-day juice detox and I've like never felt better. And I had a really difficult time not engaging in that conversation because I try not to be the crazy one at the office. But I will say I'm sure that eliminating all processed foods for 30 days will make you feel good. What I'm not sure about is how one goes about getting protein and fat over the course of that period of time. There's two different kinds of fruit juicing, and I think if you're blending up whole vegetables and making like vegetable drinks with the pulp and fiber of the vegetables, it's an entirely different situation than if you're using a juicer and just getting the juice of vegetables out. So I'll let Sarah address all that. And to what point, you know?
Yeah, so I mean,
So juice fasts, just to take a step backwards. I think there's a lot of ways in which they actually, for a short period of time, can make people feel really awesome. So it is true that some of the vitamins and minerals in juice are more easy to absorb than in the vegetable itself, although you're actually losing a lot in the pulp. So you're not getting everything from the whole vegetable that you could if you ate it. But what you are getting is pretty easy to absorb. So people are typically getting way more vitamins and minerals that, you know, basically also the vitamins and minerals that are in vegetables than they would normally, because they're getting the vitamins and minerals from, you know, 50 to 100 times more vegetables than they ate before they ever did a juice fast. So they're getting this flushing their system with some antioxidants and some, you know, great vitamins and minerals. It's not complete. And there's a lot of things they're missing. They're missing protein, missing fat, but we tend to have a lot of stores in our body to be able to go a long time without those things before starting to see the nutritional deficiencies from that, you know, have their effects. And then it's hydrating. So a lot of people are walking around dehydrated, and it really effectively deals with overgrowth. And a lot of people following Western diets have overgrowth of the wrong kinds of bacteria. So it really flushes out the digestive tract. And then, of course, the long-term effect of that is that you're not getting fiber to feed the right types of probiotic organisms in your digestive tract. So there's, you know, in terms of long-term effects, there's a lot of problems, right? Because it's missing a whole pile of really essential nutrition. It's missing fiber. And so, you know, these people who do it, you know, 10 days, like, I can understand why somebody would feel really good. Once it gets beyond that, you know, it's sort of like following the GAPS diet for a really, really prolonged period of time. You end up dealing with undergrowth. You end up dealing with nutritional deficiencies because the diet is so limited. So it's kind of an interesting thing, because people do feel really, really good when they do juice fasts. But you're right. I mean, they're cutting out grains, they're cutting out dairy, they're cutting out soy, they're dramatically increasing their vegetable intake, even if they're missing a lot of stuff that they, you know, could be getting if they were just eating the whole vegetable. And they're correcting bacterial overgrowth. So until they get to the other swing of the pendulum and end up with undergrowth, that's a pretty awesome, you know, thing to do. So yeah, the juice cleanses, I don't recommend them, but I understand why people like them for short periods of time. So there is a really big difference between making a green smoothie and you're blending up the whole vegetable, you know, with some water or something to make it thinner so that it is like drinking juice versus doing a juicer. The big difference is the fiber. So when you do the smoothie, you're getting the fiber. When you do the juice, you're getting just a tiny, tiny fraction of the fiber. And that fiber is, you know, probably some of the best fiber, you know, especially when you're using, typically when you're juicing, you're using a lot of leafy greens. That fiber is some of the best fiber for correcting gut dysbiosis. It is some of the best fiber for feeding the right kinds of probiotic bacteria. So it's actually really, really beneficial to be putting the whole vegetable into a smoothie. But you don't digest liquid foods the same way you digest solid foods, because the act of chewing is such an important signal to the release of digestive enzymes and, you know, stomach acid and bile salts. So you end up sort of suppressing digestion, which can be a problem. And also a lot of people use smoothies as a way of sort of eating on the run. So you're eating in a stressed state. You're eating while, you know, you're getting your breakfast smoothie while you're driving, or you're, you know, knocking back a smoothie as you run out the door. And that's never the best way to support digestion. It's always better to sort of, you know, relax and be in a calm environment and eat slowly. So I'm not generally a big fan. I do enjoy green juices and with no fruit whatsoever. So that's the other thing, is the sugar is also much more easily absorbed, just like the vitamins and minerals. Once you juice a vegetable, that sugar is much more easily absorbed. So a low glycemic index vegetable suddenly becomes a high glycemic index vegetable.
Yeah, especially if you don't have the fiber to balance it. I think that's right.
Yeah. So I do enjoy green juices instead of
an electrolyte type drink when I'm working out hard or after I'm working out. I find them satisfying, but these aren't for me replacing whole vegetables. So I think of them as an addition. And to me, it's really, really important to be eating a large amount of whole vegetables because of the health benefits of a diet that's rich in vegetables. So, and you're just, when you start juicing, you're missing stuff. When you make smoothies, you're not supporting digestion. Therefore, you're potentially missing stuff. So it's just something for people to keep in mind. It is always better to eat the whole food and to actually have to chew it. But generally, these would be considered paleo options. Like if you're using paleo friendly fruits and vegetables to make them, then, you know, then it's considered a paleo beverage. And that's what this show's all about.
I just want to point out, you said it, but I want to specifically like pull it out and say it. If you're juicing without the whole vegetable and without the pulp, like by my personal definition, that's not a whole food. So if you've come to paleo to have a whole foods diet and to focus on, you know, eating food the way that nature intended you to eat food, i.e., you know, you can't digest grains and wouldn't go into a grain field and eat it if you didn't have, you know, a production facility to do so, you're doing the same thing by removing, like, the juice of the pulp of the vegetable, in my opinion. Like, there's a reason that that fiber and stuff is there. So I think, you know, when people throw in, like, a handful of kale into a smoothie, I'm like, go for it, man. You know, like, whatever. You still need to eat and digest and, like, create the whole eating process. But I think that's, for me, an entirely different concept than, you know, just drinking the juice of things. And I can't imagine what that does for blood sugar, especially for a prolonged period of time.
Yeah.
Because those people are not just eating greens with lemon like you are. Anyway.
Yeah. No, I specifically, like, if I'm going to get a green juice, I get ones where the only fruit is lemon so that it's entirely vegetables. And I don't like, I mean, if it's got some, I mean, a lot of them will have apple in it, and I find them, like, I get like a sugar high off of them because they're just so much sugar hitting my bloodstream. So I don't like those. Let's do science.
That wasn't science.
No.
This is all right.
Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys.
Science. So we talked just briefly in our intro section about alcohol. And I wanted to go into a little bit more detail about whether or not alcoholic beverages are paleo. And I used air quotes, and I know nobody can see that when they're listening to the podcast, but I used air quotes around paleo because I think that when you talk about whether or not a food is paleo, there's sort of two ways of approaching that. One is to approach it based on, did, you know, hunter-gatherers or our Paleolithic ancestors consume an approximation of this food? And the other way to look at it is this a, you know, health promoting food? And I think that often we get the best insight into whether or not a food is a good choice by looking at both of those questions. So when it comes to alcohol, the first evidence of humans distilling alcohol for consumption was from about 9,000 years ago in China, which is really right around the time that grains were domesticated in China. So it followed, you know, maybe 500 or 1,000 years later came creating, you know, fermenting and creating alcoholic beverages. But that doesn't necessarily doom alcohol to being a Neolithic food, because that was when humans first started controlling the fermentation process. But fermentation of fruits happens naturally in the wild. As fruits ripen and then overripen, the alcohol content dramatically increases thanks to wild yeast. So it's actually a type of wild fermentation. And there's some idea within the scientific community that humans are actually adapted to seek out higher ethanol content fruits, and that this would have been something that we would have done sort of similar to our sort of sweet tooth being an adaptation to help us seek out, you know, these sort of really important foods that were rare in the food supply when we were hunter-gatherers, and to seek out sweet foods, we would have also been seeking out higher ethanol content foods because they would have been in the same foods. So the riper the fruit, the more alcohol content it has. That has sort of sugar alcohols, polyols, and ethanol as it starts to ferment. So there's this concept that we may be adapted to enjoy alcohol because that represented a, you know, nutrient dense, you know, important food source, an important source of calories in the Paleolithic diet. That idea is controversial. So not all scientists agree with that, that idea at this point. But when you look at our ability to actually digest alcohol, you look at the enzyme alcohol dehydrogenase, which is the alcohol in our, or it's the enzyme in our liver that breaks down alcohol. And it's, you know, really that enzyme that makes the difference between a cheap drunk and a high alcohol tolerance is how much of that enzyme you have. And it's why drinking habitually will make it harder and harder to get drunk, because you will stimulate more production of alcohol dehydrogenase in your liver by drinking habitually. And it's why drinking very, very rarely will reduce your alcohol tolerance, because if you drink very rarely, there's no stimulation to produce alcohol dehydrogenase. And many people who know me have heard me say, my liver makes no alcohol dehydrogenase, and it's why I get drunk off a teaspoon of vanilla in a dessert. So when you look at this enzyme and you look at it across our evolutionary lineage, and you look at it across primates, you actually find that the common ancestor who evolved this enzyme was about 10 million years ago. So human evolution started about 2.5 million years ago. So it's actually seen across many, many primates. And it's actually, you know, we as a group have been able to process alcohol using this great enzyme for about 10 million years. So that implies that there was a really important reason for us to be genetically adapted to consume alcohol. And it may be that it ties in with this idea that being able to consume some alcohol allowed us to seek out these wonderful, you know, just starting to ferment fruits as a source of carbohydrates in the Paleolithic diet. What's interesting is when you look at wild animals, is that there's a number of species of wild animals that do seem to enjoy getting drunk. So I had this dog growing up. Now, my dog was not a wild animal, but I had a dog growing up, and we used to have plum trees, and the plums were not very good plums. So we would just kind of let the plums fall to the ground, and the birds would eat them. And our dog knew when they fermented, and she would go and eat them off the lawn until she was like falling down, could not walk in a straight line, drunk. And I think about this often when I think about this idea of whether or not alcohol is a paleo food, because, you know, we actually see this in, we see this in primates, we see this in monkeys, we see it in like elk and caribou, we see it in bats, that there's this preference in some species for even more
fermented food. In the cool species.
Right. Clearly the cool species, because I should say moose, right? So, and when you actually look at animals in captivity, so primates in captivity or rodents in captivity, they love alcohol. And so there's been a lot of studies done in addiction that shows that animals will often naturally adapt a drinking pattern that's very similar to what a lot of humans do, which is, you know, come home from the busy work day and have a drink or two or three. And so they'll actually find that animals will preferentially drink in the evening and it, as a sort of sleep aid, which I think is how a lot of humans do it. It's sort of like it's a relaxant at the end of a hard day. And so there seems to be this natural draw for many species, not just humans, to alcohol. And we've clearly been digesting it for all of human evolution. So the difference is, of course, and it's the same with sugar now, is that our supply is much more readily available. And it's not just a seasonal thing now when, you know, fruit comes into season anymore. We can get alcoholic beverages at any time. And of course, the type of alcohol, you know, we used to be getting alcohol in basically whole food form because we were getting it in fruit that was basically starting to go bad. And now we're getting it in this distilled form. And it's become a very, very different food or beverage. So is it paleo? Well, it's certainly not what our Paleolithic ancestors were consuming, but alcohol in small quantities was clearly part of the human diet. And it may be why there's so many studies showing that low to moderate consumption of alcohol can have some health benefits. It can also have some health detriments, and there's clearly some genetic factors here. So for example, if you have autoimmune disease, I would not recommend any alcohol consumption. But this, you know, idea that we've been getting some in our diet for a very, very long time may be why, you know, why low amounts can do things like, you know, reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease or Alzheimer's. So what are the best choices? Well, grain-based alcohols, especially things like beer, have gluten in them. And gluten is a pretty potent inflammatory compound. It's a gut irritant. It many of us have food sensitivities to it. It can help support the growth of pathogenic bacteria in the digestive tract. And so gluten is generally something that the majority of people following a paleo diet are never going to choose to consume. So you need to know that beer has gluten. There are some gluten-free beer options out there. And if you're really dying for a beer, that's what I would recommend finding. Wine is probably, especially red wine, is probably the alcoholic beverage that has been associated with the most health benefits. So you'll see a lot of wine drinking among paleo peeps. And that's, you know, because generally, if you look at this argument of, you know, alcohol may not be the worst thing in the world if you're drinking it in moderation, and, you know, red wine especially probably has the most health promoting effects because of its antioxidant content. Let's go for red wine. And then distilled alcohols. So even if they're grain based distilled alcohols, the, you know, trace amount of protein is distilled out. So, you know, unless you're celiac, they should still. Have you ever had problems with
a grain-based? My mom does. Yeah, my mom does. So I don't even try, because you know my mom's anaphylactic. So, right. She's a really good gauge for me that if she has problems.
There can be some trace in the grain-based alcohols, but distilled alcohols, there's a lot of choices that are not grain-based. So, you know, vodka's made from potatoes.
Yeah,
rum is made from sugar cane.
Some vodkas are made from potatoes. You have to ask, because some are not.
Well, good to know. That's why I keep you around.
It's okay. I know my booze.
You do. So what, rum is made from sugarcane, gin, what is gin made from? Juniper berries?
It's juniper berries, and oftentimes it's mixed with a corn base. I do have a lot of problems with corn, but I don't have problems with high quality distilled gin. So, but it's juniper berries and gin, juniper berries and corn usually with gin. And then, tequila is from agave.
Those
are the ones that, if I'm going to drink that I,
and that's what you'll choose. See in a lot of, paleo friendly cocktails is gin, tequila, rum. That's pretty much it. And then the, you know, cognac or, burgundy or, you know, those things that are brandy that are made from wine. Right?
Yep. Right.
So, alcohol. The sum, the conclusion is individual experimentation, and if you're dealing with a chronic illness, it is not a good choice.
I would also suggest that people go check out, and Monica can put a link in the show notes to, it was either a series or a post that Mark Sisson put up about how he quit alcohol for 30 days and what he noticed as a result. And I've since personally talked with him about it, and he has pretty much gone the way that I've gone, which is that he just doesn't drink anymore unless it's like a really special occasion. But he was doing the same thing that I was doing, which was having like a glass of red wine almost every day. And then he, when I went AIP, I stopped, and he was doing an experiment, so he stopped. And we, I can attest to what he wrote are the same things that I wrote about. Like I just...
He talked about it when he was on our podcast last too.
Hmm.
You don't remember?
We talk about a lot of stuff.
Well, we can it's link sounding to all familiar. Of those things.
Yes, we'll link to those things so that if you want, you know, Mark Sisson's take on it, you can. But it's happened to me too. So if you trust me at all, and maybe you do because you're listening to this podcast, I don't know why, but that's been my experience as well. So even though I have a much improved healthy gut and, you know, I exercise and train and would be able to consume alcohol, it's just to me like not worth it. And when I do, it's like super special. I had alcohol last month at the Outstanding in the Field thing, and I felt really not good the next day. And I was like, oh, this is why I don't do this.
My husband's a professor, and he made tenure this year. And so we were at the president's house, the president of the university's house, for a reception for all the newly tenured faculty last Thursday. And they were passing out glasses of champagne for the toast. And I'm like, I could have one sip, you know, for a toast. I could have one sip. I ended up having like 8 sips, and I was drunk, and it was not fun.
Yeah, you posted a drunk gram. It was pretty funny.
I did post a drunken gram. Even posted a drunken gram of my husband. So there you go. My first Instagram picture of him.
I noticed that, and I was like, she's obviously inebriated posting pictures of her husband.
I know. He gave me permission.
He must have been drinking too.
I think he had a few sips of champagne as well. You know, it's a lot more fun when you never drink, I guess, or something.
Well, when I do drink now, it's something special. And, you know, granted, there are many days where I come home from work and I have a lot to do on the blog or whatever, and I'm like, oh God, I just want a glass of wine. But I'll be half as productive the next day if I do, so I don't.
All right, let's do some questions.
Really?
Yes.
All right, let's try to power through these questions.
You thought it wasn't a real show, and I kept telling you it's a real show.
I know. It's drinks, people. Just get some water.
Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
So our first question is from Jessica from Scottsdale, Arizona. And she actually has a history of candida. She says, I've been eating really squeaky clean paleo for the last 3 weeks, trying to get my candida under control, seeing lots of progress. Should I stay away from kombucha while trying to get my candida under control, or embrace it considering the probiotics? And in general, not specific to candida, what are your guys' thoughts on water kefir? So blessed by you girls and all you do. Thank you for your sweat and tears.
You know, I've always seen kind of mixed responses on this kombucha candida question, so I'll be curious to see how you respond. But I know that when I was doing 21-day sugar detoxes, which are very similar in nature to candida restrictions, I chose to have low sugar, unsweetened, non-fruit related kombucha, and I didn't worry about it. Like, you can get like the Gingerade one or something like that.
The Gingerade's my favorite.
Yeah. But I do know that there is residual sugar situation happening there. So I'm curious about your take, Sarah.
Yeah. So, you know, really the low sugar diet for candida has never actually been validated in the scientific literature. So that's a really important thing to keep in mind. And, you know, what we do know is that regulating blood sugar is really important, but getting every single trace, you know, molecule of glucose and fructose out of your diet does not seem to be that important. So, you know, as long as you're drinking kombucha in an amount that's not elevating your blood sugar, that should not be hindering your ability to resolve a candida infection. And in fact, eating more prebiotic and probiotic foods can be dramatically helping to get rid of that infection. So we know that large fiber intake, especially insoluble fiber, so leafy greens, and large long-chain omega-3 fatty acid intake, so that's seafood, those are the two things that have the best corrective influence on the gut microbiome. And then next to that is the consumption of probiotic foods. And we know that kombucha is a mix of yeast and bacteria, and that it's, you know, probiotic bacteria and yeast that will actually suppress the growth of candida. So I think it's a fantastic choice, as long as you're, you know, making sure your blood sugars are well regulated. A great way to do that is to stick with the, you know, unsweetened or minimally, you know, because there is sugar added for to feed the kombucha. So they, the kombucha is actually ferment, has to ferment something, and fermentation means breaking down sugar. So so there is sugar added. So you look for one that has less residual sugar, it's been fermented longer, and it doesn't have things like fruit juices added. And just make sure that your blood sugar levels are well regulated, and you're doing the other things like, you know, broth and lots of vegetables and lots of seafood that are really, really good for correcting gut dysbiosis and healing a leaky gut.
I think they call that phase three of real life paleo.
I heard that. I don't know where I heard that though.
Well, I'm pretty sure you read it and talked about it in the foyer, in the foreword.
I'm pretty sure I did. Writing the foreword. So then the sort of side part of that question about water kefir. Kefir is actually a very similar type of organism to kombucha in the sense that it's a symbiotic culture of bacteria and yeast. And it also has, it's just slightly different strains. And so it grows in like a, I don't know, like the grains, they're kind of smushy things on the bottom instead of a jellyfish thing on the top.
What?
Have you ever grown your own kefir?
I have not. I found that they came with little grains that weren't real grains.
Yeah, no, the grains are like a SCOBY. So they're actually the culture of bacteria and yeast, but they kind of sink to the bottom as opposed to a kombucha SCOBY, which floats on the top.
I can't give you a confirmation.
Anyway, I'm telling you this because I've grown both.
Gotcha.
But it's a very similar idea in the sense that it's a, you know, living organism that you're growing in some kind of liquid that it likes to grow in, that has some sugar that it likes to eat. Water kefir is very, very similar to kombucha in the sense that it has probiotic bacteria and yeast, and also a little bit bubbly and delicious. So I think it's a great choice. There you go.
I've had somebody brought once like a root beer kefir, and I don't know what they did or how they made it. They brought it to a potluck. Sometimes things come to potluck and I don't even know who brought them. And I'm like, who brought this? I need the recipe. I think it was my friend Alexa actually. So I could probably figure it out, but she like made root beer with kefir, and it was before I had done, kombucha myself. And so when I was like, I need to know how to do this. And she was like, okay, well, I'll give you some grains, and then you do this, and then you do that, and then in this step, and then out. I was like, oh, never mind.
That's awesome. I've had a root beer flavored kombucha before, and root beer was one of the things in my olden days that I used to drink a lot of, so I was in absolute heaven.
Well, these days you can get, which we haven't mentioned, why can't I think of the name? Live soda, which is like a combination of kombucha, but then they also do like a second ferment flavor. They do include stevia, so Sarah's probably not a huge fan. But as an occasional treat,
I think they have one flavor or two flavors that don't have stevia.
The boys absolutely love them. I get them on their birthdays. They're not very affordable either. And it's not to say that it's not great what the company's doing. I don't mind paying for high quality ingredients, but it's just not something I'm going to buy on a regular basis. So when I see them on sale, or if it's like the boy's birthday or like special occasion or something, I'll get them a live soda. And you would have thought that like I gave them $1 million. And I've had my favorite of the live sodas are the root beer ones.
Let's do another question. So this question is about coffee, which we also didn't talk very much about. And this, it's from, I don't know if I'm pronouncing her name right, Salman. I'm currently recovering from a bout of leaky gut. My diet is pretty good, mostly paleo, and I am making slow but steady gains. My only weakness is coffee. I do have a cup every day, after which I notice I get stiffness in my joints. I am trying to quit and hope to find the strength to do so. I meant to ask you, would black tea be a safe alternative? Many thanks.
So I have found that the best alternative is that root tea. What is it?
Dandelion?
Yeah. Dandelion root tea tastes a lot like coffee, and I'm pretty sure it's caffeinated, right? Because it's black?
No.
No, not caffeinated. The one that I like that's caffeinated? No. The licorice tea is not caffeinated either.
No, Chaffee has a little bit of caffeine.
I drink Chaffee before bed and have no problems. I don't believe there's actually caffeine in it. So there's Chaffee, which we haven't talked about either, which is like a brewed cocoa. So it's a cross between like chocolate coffee, but it's not like a mocha. It's much more nutty and watery. I love Chaffee.
Basically making coffee, but using cocoa beans instead of coffee beans.
Yeah. And there's a whole bunch of, there's like, I think it's called Coco Mana. There's a couple of brands of brewed cacao is what it's called. We can put links in the show notes. Yeah, so when I was AIP and wasn't doing coffee, but I wanted the taste of coffee because I actually drink decaf. I love the taste of coffee. I did the dandelion root and licorice teas. And I really, really, really like matcha powder, which you can get. It's kind of expensive, but they do sell it like at my natural food store. And just read the labels because some of them have like dairy or sugar in them. But I also really enjoyed making matcha.
So there's a recipe for herbal coffee in the Paleo Approach cookbook.
Which I haven't made, but I have heard wonderful things about. I remember one of the first photos, or was it the lady that was on the show said that she made like a double batch?
Yeah, she was making it like every day and then turning them into like lattes with coconut milk. She was going like, she was getting very excited about it. So it's dandelion root and chicory root and a little bit of carob, and it's much closer to coffee than just dandelion root by itself. And I can't remember the quantities. Otherwise, I would just share the recipe on the show. But since I can't remember the quantities, I guess people are going to have to get my book out of the library. So there's that's an option as an herbal coffee. Chaffee wouldn't technically be considered autoimmune protocol. This woman isn't actually mentioning autoimmune protocol because it's made with chocolate, but it would be considered sort of like a stage one reintroduction. It would be like one of the first few foods I would recommend reintroducing because I think the ability or its propensity to be causing problems is lower compared to a lot of the other foods that are eliminated. Tea, I think, is a pretty good alternative. So caffeine is a gut irritant, but what's inflammatory in coffee is far beyond the caffeine. And in fact, decaf coffee is even more inflammatory than regular coffee. And so there's a whole class of different substances that are in coffee that are known to be inflammatory. There's also a bunch of antioxidants. And what happens when you decaffeinate coffee is you strip out a bunch of those antioxidants along with the caffeine, and you leave the more inflammatory compounds. And that's why decaf is more inflammatory than regular coffee. Caffeine is definitely a gut irritant. There's about a quarter the amount of caffeine in black tea compared to coffee. And you're avoiding all of the other inflammatory compounds that are in coffee that are not in tea. So the only other thing in tea that may be worth considering is that the tannins in tea, which is kind of why black tea tastes so amazing. Tannins are an antioxidant, so that's like yay, and antimicrobial, also yay, but they also can hinder digestion, especially of proline-rich proteins. So this is one of those like geeky moments because we see a lot of proline-rich proteins in plant proteins like gluten and wheat germ gluten and soy lectin and peanut lectin And so, you know, drinking black tea with grains and legumes may actually make the problems that we have with grains and legumes worse. That's something to keep in mind. But if you're paleo, or at least mostly paleo, chances are there's not very many grains and legumes left in your diet to be of concern there. So I personally drink black tea, and I drink coffee occasionally now. I know that when I start to let my consumption get daily, I see inflammation. I know it's doesn't work for me at that level, but that if it's, you know, once every week and a half, then it's usually okay. But I do drink black tea every day and seem absolutely fine with black tea. So, black tea, green tea, they're really high in antioxidants. They've got some pretty cool stuff in it. But the caffeine can be a gut irritant. So do just be wary of that if you're dealing with a severely leaky gut. But if it's one cup, it's almost certainly going to be well tolerated. So I think that's all I wanted to say about tea and coffee.
Sweet.
And I think that's a show.
Beverages. Who knew we could talk for an hour and 14 minutes?
That's because the people wanted to know about the beverages. It's not just about food. It's about liquid. That could be like our new slogan.
Okay. Well, I hope you feel better. I am going to be seeing you so soon, and I can't wait for you to feel better so you can relax and enjoy Real Life Paleo, which is, you know, yet another niece or nephew. Someone needs to talk to us about, you know, book birth control. So enjoy it.
That was awesome. Now, my brain has gone in about 6 different tangents at once, so that means that nothing's going to come out except me laughing, because there's just too many ideas in my head.
Awesome. Well, have a great one, everyone. Don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes. And if you have our books or want our books, go order them, pre-order them, or leave a review. We would be ever so grateful. And if you're going to do any shopping, doing it through the sidebars of our blog makes us super happy, because it means we can pay our team of people that help keep this running. So thanks for that.
Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites, or by donating through PayPal.